taking care of business. Path to Pro Radio is on.
Yep.
Now, play them licks, man.
Here you go.
Play that thing.
Yeah, you know, hold on. You know, it's so funny. We do this, and I don't play guitar. We play in a band together at night.
Yeah.
And
well, what a percussionist Bill is, man.
And Jimmy plays guitar, and we're faking this thing out every time we do the show. So bless me, Father, if I sin.
Welcome to another Path to Pro. Yes, this is the podcast you listen to only if you want to get better at what you're doing.
Yeah, yeah. You know? We talk about being a pro. We're going to interview pros, and we have a great pro here today, a longtime client of mine who really has a fascinating story, and Smitha Ramjandani. Hey, Smitha, how are you?
Hey, I'm good. How are you guys?
Wonderful. Doing you sound great.
Yeah.
We appreciate your time this morning, Smitha. We'd like to get, just for the audience sake, have like a little miniature bio of you, where you're from, how you got to where you're at today.
Yeah, tell all the way back from you know where.
Yeah. Okay, so I'll try to be as short as possible. I grew up in Bombay in India, which is now called as Mumbai. I grew up a very humble beginning on the streets of Mumbai, literally, with no bathrooms, but my mom and dad were very supportive, and they finally bought a really tiny apartment in a 312 square feet apartment. We grew up with one bathroom. Wow. And we had a salon in the house also. So at night it got converted into a home, but during the day from 9 to 7, it was a salon. So it was hard, but we made ends work. My parents worked really hard. We did a lot of hairdos. I can still make wigs. I grew up doing that.
I need one.
Yeah, I was
save
say.
One for me.
Maybe we should talk about this after the show.
Yeah.
You can wake me up in the middle of the night and I can do a hairdo. So that's no problem.
Yeah.
Then we expanded to 3 more salons. So we had 4 salons while I worked, while I studied at night for my graduation and my master's in management. It was a lot of hard work, but we made it work. And the priority was always customer service, because it was a salon. We had to make everyone feel amazing before they come into the door. They feel differently when they leave the door. They have to feel absolutely like a princess.
Mm,
so that's what we did. And that was our customer service, and that's how we grew. And then I fell in love with Rahul, and I moved to United States for love.
Wait a minute, was this an arranged marriage?
No.
And what year was that?
This was a love marriage, and I eloped with $100 in my wallet. Rahul bought the tickets for me, and I had complete faith that my future would change, and I wanted it to be different than my other siblings.
Yeah. And, what year was that, Smitha?
96.
Wow. Wait a minute. So you went against the family rules, didn't you?
Yes.
So you are a rebel from the beginning, and you still are today in real estate.
Yeah.
But so how was that coming over here from there with $100?
You know, Raul was very supportive, very good family. It was very hard because I came from a very chaotic city like New York City. And then I come to New Jersey and it's quiet and there are no people. And I'm like, where are all the people? I got here in September 8th. I got married December 8th. I had my license by December 15th.
Wow.
Of 1996.
Wait a minute. So 1 year to get your license. You got here, then got your license, or?
No, it was 3 months.
Okay, got it. Mm-hmm. All right, wow. So was there a language issue, or did you study English also when you were there?
No, there was no language issue. I got educated in an English school, but I do speak 5 Indian languages.
Wow.
Because it's a very, you know, like a melting pot, just like New York, Bombay is that way. So,
well, when you came over, Smitha, what was it that said, you know, you need to do real estate?
Well, you know, it was very hard. I wanted to be a lawyer. They didn't transfer my credits very well. And I didn't want to go undergrad again when I already did my master's. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't willing to take another loan because Raul also was studying. And then we were also taking care of his brother who was pursuing becoming a doctor. So we had a lot of expenses to begin with. So I decided, okay, I'll make a sacrifice there. And I decided, okay, maybe I can open up a salon because I was so experienced and I ran, you know, three salons. But here you needed a license. You needed 2000 hours of, you know, working under somebody. And I just didn't have the time. I was like, no, I can do something better without much investment.
I got you.
Wow. And so you did. So it's so hard to, for me sometimes to just go, you got people in this business in the United States that, and you, we talk about this a lot, that are trying to make a living in real estate. You broke down some doors, physically and also figuratively, you know, to get your business going. What kept driving you, Smitha? What kept you going? Because you're still the same today because I've known you for years. But what got you to keep going into this new country and just and have that attitude that I'm going to make it?
So, you know, to be honest, I have seen poverty. I have lived through hunger. I just don't want to go back to that ever. That was one of my motivations, where I felt like there is a better life. If you really work hard, there is a better life out there for you. And I feel like there's always hope and you got to live in that sense. Like, okay, if this doesn't work, let's try another way to make it work. If this doesn't work, let's try another way. I can't keep doing the same thing over and over again. I like change. I adapt change very well. So for me, going back was not an option.
It was succeed or there wasn't a plan B.
There was no plan B, correct.
So interesting. And so now you're here in the United States. How did you get your business started? How did that all work for you?
Well,
did you sell hair to people door to door along with real estate? How'd that go?
Well, I was the youngest in the company that I joined out of 16,000 agents. So I already had people look at me that, oh, this young girl is not going to be successful. And I'm a brown girl and I'm in New Jersey and I'm like, okay, what can I do? And I had a lot of hardships. I had a bad mentor. I changed the mentor. So that was a rebellious thing that happened during my first year and people were not talking to me. So there's a lot of things that happened. I had to break through all of the traditions in a way that people thought that you needed to be in real estate or be to be accepted in that environment. And you got to be one of them to be accepted. And that I was not willing to do.
Well, okay. For those of you that know personality styles, what personality do you think Smitha is? Is she a driver? Or is she an able? I know her. And so you had strong drive, and to this day you still have that drive. So in other words, what you're saying is there's a lot of people doubting you, not making you feel positive. You did not let that affect you at all, correct? So how did you get up in the mornings knowing that these people really didn't want you to be successful, and then when you're successful, what happens? It's even worse.
Well, I think I like challenges. I think it's nice to be, sometimes people say you're underestimated. You're in a very good position when you're underestimated. So I was so underestimated, but when I had so many hardships, I figured out a way to say, who are the people, what area I'm going to be accepted for my age, for who I am, being new, and who's going to be the clientele that's going to accept me for who I am. Ooh. So I tried to fake it. I tried to gray my hair, wear fake glasses.
You did not. You did?
I swear.
Did your glasses have a nose attached? Was it that kind of glasses?
Yeah, Groucho, did you?
I actually still have the glasses with me.
That is great. Which is, you know, what's interesting, if you read the book, and you know, I've talked about this before, this thing that Todd Herman talks about in his book. Let's see if I have it in front of me. It's right under me right here. The alter ego. He talks about this transformation that you make, and you did this thing to try to get there. So what happened?
Well, I it was a challenge. So I took up the challenge and I said, okay, how do I get here? So what I did was I figured out that I lived in the city in Bombay. Everything is high rises. There's like really no big houses. And according to my age, I'd said, I will do condos and townhomes. And there are younger people there. It's a price point that I can work with. It's buildings that I actually understand. So I went to the town hall the old way, pulled up all the floor plans, memorized all the floor plans. So some townhome communities had 15 floor plans. I memorized every single one of them. And then I attacked one particular location where there was a lot of turnover. And there was this one agent that had 50% of the share there. You couldn't beat that competition. But I just wanted, because I knew that was going to be the location that I'm going to be the most accepted. And the price points were not very low, but they were not very high either, because the high price point was very difficult for me to get into.
How fast did you get a deal out of there?
I would say probably I worked it. I made the phone calls and I went for listing appointments. Like, I know exactly which floor plan they are in. I would say probably in the next like 4 months. And then within a year, that 50% agent was gone.
Oh, love that. And you also said something very important.
Yeah.
She made some calls.
Made some calls. And you know, the homework you did
prior
to going in, I mean, with your attitude, your gumption, your homework, that guy didn't stand a chance.
Yeah. I mean, who memorizes 15 plans? No, no one does.
Nobody
that.
Does. Nobody.
I mean, they don't even want to do that today. But if I went into this, went to a office and asked them to memorize 15 plans, because that will guarantee you success.
Yeah. Not so much.
We're not going to get anybody.
Yeah. So let me tell you, last night I went for a listing appointment, and Bill, you know, I went at 8:15 at night for the listing appointment, and I know the community really well, but I had to memorize which model it is, just to refresh my memory. And this seller had interviewed already four people before me. And I go in there and I start talking about her model and the differences with the model. That's how I started. And then she's like, oh, you know really well what the models are and the community. I said, yeah, I know it like back of my hand. And I think no matter what you do, I think you have to go so prepared. And that is something Bill taught me very early on, but I already knew it early on, but it kept pushing on my head, like, no, go prepared, go prepared, go prepared. And it was ultimately, I got the listing. So it's just one of those things where you really have to study and practice and just go.
Yeah, I'm going to tell you what. So Smith and I had a conversation maybe 30 days ago, and I said, and I want you to talk about the present market also. But I said, and then you go, you mean, what do you say? I said, we got to do X, 1, 2, 3, and 4. You go, you mean we got to, what did you say to me?
I don't remember.
Okay, well, I really made an impression
what
there.
What did she say?
Okay, so Smitha goes, Bill, get some more hair. No, she says, you mean we got to go back to what we did early on?
Yes.
Remember that?
Yes.
Because tell me, and also explain to other people, because first of all, and we'll talk about this other market that you're in, but you're in a market that's highly competitive. She, and I've known her for years, she's always looking for a challenge, and now she's going, can I say where you're going, the other market? Can I talk about that?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, so they've established themselves fairly well in New Jersey.
Yeah.
They have a team. Then she decides, I want to tackle Manhattan.
Okay, then. Well, I mean, That's next.
Yeah, yeah. So tell them the difference between New Jersey and working as a trying to break into the Manhattan market.
You know, Manhattan is like Bombay to me, so it feels, it doesn't feel as intimidating to me, because I like the chaos, I like the noise, I like what's going on there. And it has always been something that I always wanted to do, but, you know, I had responsibilities with in-laws and my kids, and then my kids in August, now I'm an empty nester, so my younger one is in NYU, the other one is in Northeastern, so it was like almost breaking free. And like I said, I adapt change very easily. And I'm okay, what do I do next from here? And that's the market I wanted to go in. And I have a great partner there. And we have some really high-end listings that, and I've done a few transactions already. So it's a very exciting time.
And tell them that the difference, and some of the real estate agents that are listening don't understand that this is not a market that is normal real estate protocol, right?
No.
What are some of the biggest difference from Jersey to New York, Manhattan, working there?
So New Jersey, our market here, the inventory is so low. It's unreal. It's less than we've ever seen in like probably 30 years. And every property that gets listed, we have 10, 15 offers. It's even more active than pandemic. And the prices continue to rise at a level that I think I'm surprised.
And what price point are those properties you're dealing with typically?
All price points. They range from $400,000 to $3 to $4 million. I just put a contract in where we put in $275,000 over asking price for... It was listed for 1.6. We sold it for 1.95.
This is in Jersey or Manhattan?
Yeah,
in Jersey. So then, so that's a normal market with craziness going on. And then Manhattan has no MLS. None, right?
None.
So
no. So
how's
so
that York, work?
So New York is basically, I would call it a jungle, like a cement jungle, concrete. Mm. And we have no MLSs. There are different programs that we have to get access information from, and agents try to share it. There is an RLS system that we have to abide by, and we put our listings there. And then we go into that site to see what the listings are. But the New York market is actually a very healthy market. It's basically a 50-50 market right now. The buyers have options, the sellers are not dropping their prices as much, and there's a negotiation happening. It does take longer to sell in Manhattan, but again, you're dealing with different laws in Manhattan. You have co-op laws, you have condo laws, you have condo op laws, you have townhouses. So there's so many different variables that come. Now, locations are going to be pretty amazing there, Upper West Side, Upper East Side, Chelsea. So there's just a different, I can't describe it. It's total chaotic.
I believe that.
Yeah. Well, being that I lived in the Bronx, but never went to Manhattan a lot because it was like a scary place. It was big.
Yeah. Everything about Manhattan is chaotic as far as I've seen. Everything.
The Central Park is beautiful.
Yeah,
there are some beautiful places. The rooftops are beautiful with the views and the sunsets and sunrises. So there's a lot of beauty there too.
And so there's a big change in pricing from New Jersey to there. Like, I mean, just a normal property, average property in Manhattan, and let's go to luxury and then ultra luxury. Give us the price range on there.
Luxury, you're talking, I would say, $4.5 million and up. And ultra luxury, you're talking 20 and up, 30.
Jimmy's going, I got to move.
You don't need a stick man in Manhattan, do you? You don't need a guy to introduce you when you enter a room or anything.
Yeah, here's Smitha. And see, he had his voice.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Yes.
Come stand. In. It's Smithitide.
Oh, that, she loved that. Yeah. Actually, she would love that. Go to a network function. She has her own announcer.
Yeah,
she
walks absolutely.
Who's this guy with you? That's Jimmy Ray, man.
Yeah. And I really can't talk until he announces me. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, she has a complete production crew. And I go, all right, Jimmy, you're on.
And no.
Yeah, so this is good. So, and then, okay, so you have a lead and you got to call. How do you talk to the listing agent if you have a buyer? How does that whole protocol work?
In New York?
Yeah, in Manhattan.
In Manhattan, nobody really talks to each other. Everything's done by emails. If we have to make appointments, we send an email. It's, you know, by the time I'm done, by the end of the day, I have like 200 emails a day.
Wow.
Because nobody really talks as much on the phone. And unless you have an offer, then they'll pick up the phone.
So
otherwise,
at that price point, Smitha, how did the other agents that were in that space selling that price point, how did they like Smitha coming in and grabbing the action?
Or taking that away from them?
I think there is business for everyone. I truly believe that. I haven't had such negative.
So no nasty grams.
I have not had that actually. You really don't have a conversation, right? You're only emailing.
So no one knows who you are.
And what it's not so much.
And what is Raul's place in this whole scheme here that you're doing?
Raul is very supportive. He doesn't want to do New York.
So he's real estate.
He's in Jersey.
He's a Jersey.
Yes, he does real estate. He does New Jersey.
I got
you. Yeah.
And he's running the team in New Jersey. So tell us how many people you have working in New Jersey with Raul.
So including Raul and me, we're six of us.
Six of us, yeah.
Yeah.
And last year you did how many units?
We did 102.
Okay. So, you know, what's so interesting, and the only thing I want to talk about, not that I want you to say anything good about me, but how much, because we've talked for a long time, for years, how did coaching help you? Because some people fear coaching because they think, oh my gosh, they're going to make me do something and it's going to be stressful. I mean, tell them what it's done for you, because I think that's something that people have to understand, because I'll let you say what it is.
Okay. So, I will tell you one thing. I was a single agent, and I was working 90-hour days, and I was exhausted because I was a total control freak. And usually now I understand that a driver is a control freak. They feel like everything you can do is right the way you do it. And I had a part-time assistant, but it was very difficult to let go and give and delegate.
Now that just sounds like a wife.
She's her own wife.
My way or the highway, brother.
So I think, Bill came and opened up my whole level of mindset that you can grow more with delegating. And if you give up a little bit of control that you're not good at, you will do really, really well. And that mindset, when as a coach, like an idea that I never thought of because I was so, I had no time because I was just doing the small things that I was not good at, was like, oh my God, like a Pandora box opened up and my whole world opened up to possibilities that I did not think of. And I will tell you, Bill, and this is not because we're on the podcast, I will tell you, you have changed my life, my personal life, my artificial life, in terms of, like, you know, my cars, my houses, the things that I've been able to do that I dreamt of was opened up dramatically for me.
Yeah, and let me just say that we coached for a while, then we had a long break, and she's back with me again. But what's interesting about her, and she's very smart, is that, and I love that about you and Raul, is the fact you still called me. We've talked even though we weren't coaching, you would still call me up and she would still tell people, he's my coach.
Yes.
And I'm the same way with my coaches. You know, I mean, if I work with someone, you know, like I have an attorney in New York, Richard Rosen, who, you know, saved me from a whole bunch of stuff, probably one of the number one franchise. He is still my, we don't have any more business going on, but he's still my attorney. He is my attorney. There's no one else I'd go to. Why? What do you think?
Well, I think it's relationship. Hmm. It's pure trust. It's making you feel that there is a different angle. And also there is accountability of someone telling you, this is what you need to do. Look it from a third person, because I've bounced ideas from you and you've been absolutely honest with me, Bill, saying, what are you doing? Are you crazy? Well, no one else told me that.
Yeah. Can you wife up and tell her it's okay when I do that to her? No way.
But, you know, in terms of just business, in terms of a coach personally, I think I was able to build my team step by step, understanding personalities, understanding what the culture needs to be, understanding how to let go and delegate and focus on your positives and focus on your strengths. And you told me to read the red book and write down things. And that was a big eye opener for me.
Yeah. Not the old red book, but the new red book.
Correct.
And that red book, for those of you that don't know what I'm talking about, which is coming out in second edition, is called The Ultimate Sales Machine.
And it's red.
And it's red.
Yeah.
And it's Chet Holmes passed away. It's to turbocharge your business with relentless focus on 12 key strategies. The book is fantastic. If you're developing a team, if you want to get really good in sales, when he wrote this book, he said stuff that I totally agree with 90% of. And Smitha and the team started working on that. Fantastic. So now that you're breaking in to all these markets and stuff, where do you think the business is going? Is this an opportunity you think you can capture now with the market shift taking place? What are your thoughts?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think there is so much opportunity out there. It's just like you said yesterday to me, you just have to grab it.
Right. And yeah, you got to have to step it up. I mean, like you said, like what Jimmy was saying, the learning the 15 plans you just have to do extra things to capture that business in today's marketplace. And the ones that are willing to do what you are doing, and I know you are, and you know, the other thing I want to say about Smitha is that when she walks into a room, you know, and I said this to her hundreds of times, you know she's there. Even if Jimmy doesn't become her announcer.
Smitha Ramjandani.
Yeah, ladies and gentlemen, here she is.
I would love for Jimmy to
do that. Wouldn't that be great? You're going to blow people away.
Let me know. Just let me know.
Just let me.
I'll give you my deets.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So, Smitha, it's been a great interview, probably one of the best ones I've done in a long time with people, because you have such a great story. If someone wants to know about Manhattan, wants to know about, you know, what's going on in Jersey, just want to talk to you, how do they get a hold of you?
I'm available on Google everywhere. My phone number, my email, everywhere's there, but I can give you my cell number, 973-953-7777.
Yeah, she is the person you want to talk to, because she's been through a lot. And if you've gone through a lot and you're not where you want to be,
yeah,
definitely.
What a story, Smitha. Thank you so much for your time.
See you, Smitha.